Meadow Kaufeld is the Minnesota and Western Upper Peninsula Regional Biologist, the Ruff Grouse Society and the American Woodcock Society, and she joins us in the studio. Grouse hunting opened on Saturday, is that right?
Yes, it did.
And there's no way you were not out there.
Oh, of course we were. It's one of those things, it's like Christmas morning. Even though we know the conditions aren't the best because of all the leaves on the trees, we still make a point to get out there. And again, we live most of the year for this few couple weekends of the season where it's good before rifle season. So
how was it? What were...
Well, Saturday was all right. We had 18 flushes on grouse and about 12 on woodcock, and we took 4 grouse. And the only thing that's kind of interesting is that we had 3 females and 1 male, and 3 of the birds were adult. And so we only had 1 juvenile, and 2 of them were adult females. So that's kind of interesting. The reason why I mention ages and sexes is that by those ratios, you can come up with an idea of recruitment. And this is opening weekend, and the conditions are difficult. It was wet, and most people didn't really put as much effort maybe as they would have. So it's like a doctor with a prognosis, like, well, I kind of need to know some more information. But impression was kind of... Maybe we're surprised at this point, but I am holding off judgment for another couple weekends for sure.
So average grouse hunter shoots a grouse. Now he's got it in his hands. How does he know if it's a male or female?
Well, the most surefire way, well, there's 2 ways, is to look at the rump feathers. And, you know, it's something that someone has to really show you. But males have 2 light spots stacked on top of each other, whereas females only have 1. And then, of course, you know, there's other things that may help indicate that, but that's pretty surefire. And if you can't tell, you open them up and you look for the testes.
Right, right. Yeah. I know that part. the rump feathers. Now, I'm not an ornithologist, but you're not talking tail feathers. You're talking about the feathers before the tail.
Yeah. So these are the feathers.
Are these undertail coverts, or are these on the top?
These are on the back of the bird. So basically from the shoulders of the bird to the base of the tail. Mm-hmm. And typically I look a little bit below the base of the tail when I'm checking out these feathers. But you got to look at a couple of them in that general area to be sure, because there is some variation between feathers as well as individuals.
Well, the nice thing about this is if you shot the bird, you certainly can experiment. I mean, you can say, from what Meadow said, this should be a male. And then when you gut it, you'll know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like even here at the National Hunt, when we have those birds come through the tent and we're getting those demographics on them, occasionally you have to open a bird up and look to be sure that it's a male or a female, because there is just, there's variation as there is in anything in nature.
Right. And so back to this ratio that you were talking about, this for your prognosis, 2 females, a male, and a juvenile.
Yep.
What would you hope for, or what would be the most encouraging arrangement in those 4 birds? What would have made your eyes go, wow, this is going to be such a great year?
Well, I mean, again, I'm holding out judgment. I'm not saying anything about whether or not we had good recruitment, but, you know, preferably majority would be juveniles.
Okay.
Yeah.
That tells you that we've got a lot of success.
Yep. There's a lot of birds coming into the population, at the end of our basically rearing season. And, so right now, my personal, and again, it's personal, it's localized, experience was that we had more adults than juveniles in the bag. And again, there's so many areas for variation, so I can't hold any sort of judgment, but I was surprised.
Okay, so now we've talked a little bit about male-female. How do we know juvenile-adult?
Well, right now, early season, the adults and juveniles are a little easier to tell from the most part. The adult birds molt their outer 2 primaries. I believe that's 9 and 10. And those birds, basically, they replace those feathers. And so right now, a lot of them are in pin feather stage. So you can see the outer 2 wing feathers are shorter. And at the base, there's a lot of sheathing. And a lot of times, they're also still in the pin feather stage. Also, because they replace those feathers on the outer registry, or the wing feathers of grouse tend to be rounder, whereas if they're a juvenile, they don't replace those outer primaries, and so they tend to be sharper in shape and show a little bit of wear, and they wouldn't be in pin feather or sheathing most typically, unless they maybe lost one or trying to replace it. But normally they don't replace those wing feathers.
So it's the adults that are going to look like they're growing new feathers, not the juveniles.
On those two wing feathers, yep. So if
on
you
those
have a,
two, and those are the last
two. The last two, yep. The pointer and indexer.
So like yeah, yep. So at the end, you stretch out the wing.
Yep.
The first two feathers at the end of the wing, the two yep. long flight feathers at the end of the wing yep. are going to be the two that will be indicative of...
Yeah, and if you, like I said, if you have a bird in hand and that those are being replaced, both of them on each side, you know for sure you've got an adult.
Okay, yeah. Cool, yeah. So what kind of country were you hunting?
Well, we were in northwestern Itasca in the Wirt area, so, you know, it's a lot of the, are you talking about habitat type or mm-hmm. actual terrain? Okay, well, the majority of the birds that we encountered were in mixed forest, and that has a lot to do with the weather. You know, grouse will use conifers for cover when it's wet. And so this weekend was quite wet, and a lot of the birds were that we did find were around or nearby heavy conifer cover like spruce and balsam. But again, we also hit the typical aspen with a dense understory mm-hmm. type habitats that people associate with grouse hunting.
Yeah, I've been cutting my firewood, and I've got a couple of birds that are kind of hanging out in what is sort of a tip of high ground leading into a black spruce swamp, but it's a mixture of spruce. There's a couple of Norway pines. There's some maples. There's some birch. There, you know, it's just kind of mixed up. And they this one bird has been in the same spot two times, and now I've gone out and tried to flush him, and he's still there, but...
he knows the spot.
He knows the spot, and he knows which
he
way
knows
to go
how to
when
get
he
out
leaves.
Of there.
Yeah,
yep. He knows which tree to fly behind, right. And he's been there. He's not his first rodeo. Yeah. You educated Indeed. Him.
he's been shot at. Not this year, but in the past, there has been a bird out there. That's where I actually found a nest out in that same area.
Oh, okay.
They like it out there. It's a reliable spot to scare up birds.
Well, it's good to know. A good one to have in your mind.
Yep. Always nice.
We're talking with Meadow Kaufeld today. She's a biologist with the Ruffed Grouse Society and the American Woodcock Society. Let's talk a little bit about if and how we're getting younger generations into hunting, I guess. I know your daughter is a hunter.
Yeah.
Earlier than most people, or will be a hunter. She's only four, right?
Yes. She's an avid fisherwoman at this point, and she loves to go hunting. So
that's great.
But, one of the biggest challenges that we face in North America is the decline of hunters. And a lot of it, in part, has to do with the urbanization of our populations. And you know, there's programs like the Ruffed Grouse Society has a new hunter mentor program, and other conservation organizations as well as state and federal agencies have these programs to give people a chance to experience hunting, develop skills, and maybe even find a mentor. The youngest generations, it's tough to do it, to get them involved if they don't have their parent support. A big part of hunter recruitment retention is a social network or social support. And so one of the best ways that, you know, we're starting to see, or in my opinion too, is to get adults involved, especially their parents, and particularly mothers. Women and mother roles basically have a lot of influence over their children and how they think and perceive the world. And in the case of bringing mothers or young women that will be mothers into hunting, is you're impacting children that are on the ground now and in the future. And a lot of times they're much more likely to take up hunting if their mother hunts or if their mother has a positive perspective of hunting. And so we also have the Women's Intro to Wing Shooting Program, which is a multi-month course. And we have one here locally. This is the second year. We will be offering it next year. But basically that takes ladies through months of shooting and education to kind of build up the background of becoming a hunter and those skills as well. And ultimately, even if they don't become hunters and just have a positive experience, that's a win when it comes to recruiting children, is, again, having the parental support and that social support behind them.
I've noticed that trap shooting has become quite popular with high schools, and they're organizing teams and competing. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that a lot of those competitors are young ladies. And yes, it's pretty exciting. It's actually daunting for me because I'm a terrible shot. But I like to think of it as preserving the.
Yes. Well, the clay is very different than a bird. But yes, children's or high school trap and is becoming huge. It's just grown exponentially over the last couple of years, especially here in Minnesota. And when they hold the state championship in Alexandria, I do believe it's the largest shooting event in the world.
Wow.
And I think they had something like 7,500 to 8,000 kids come through this year over a week-long period. And I can't be absolutely 100% sure on those numbers, but it's big.
So is there a kind of a cross relationship there? If you get somebody who's into trap, can you get them out? Is it easier to get them out bird hunting?
That's the challenge right now, is trying to bridge the two. Obviously, there's a connection there, but there still is a challenge to get those students or those kids from going from being trap shooters and just sport shooters in general to actually hunting. But they are, you know, they have the skill set, and so they're more likely to succeed, and they would be an easier target to recruit. And so there are organizations that are starting to involve the trap teams.
Good.
Sounds good. So, and how did the class end up? We're getting toward the end of the intro to wing shooting.
Yep.
And they're enjoying it. Things are going well.
Yeah. We had, so here in Grand Rapids, we had 22 enrollees. Wow. And we had a waiting list. So we actually took two more than we were planning on taking, which was excellent. You know, retention varies. People have different reasons, but we're probably going to have like 16 to 18 ladies here this weekend, which coming weekend is our culmination hunt. So at the end of this couple month course, they get to use all their skills at a pheasant preserve. So we're going to be in Warba, Pheasants Plus, and we have volunteer guides, and the ladies get to go out with these guides and their dogs and have a pheasant hunt. So the course went really well. The ladies love it. Last year was well received. This year was well received, and I've heard nothing but positive things. And again, it's pretty popular here now. And looking forward to seeing those ladies put it all together this weekend.
Yeah, it's great.
What are the dates for the national hunt?
They are the week of the 9th through the 13th. I don't remember the exact dates now, but that's second to third week in October typically.
All right.
And what is the national hunt?
So the national hunt's been going on for, this will be the 36th year, I believe. It is basically a large fundraiser for the Rough Grouse Society, and it's hosted here every year in Grand Rapids for a lot of reasons, the amount of public land and facility, and then also kind of a core group of people that are involved. But folks from all over the nation and sometimes the world come to Grand Rapids, and they stay here and they hunt for 2 days, and there's 104 people at most, so 52 teams. And they go out within a 90-mile radius of Grand Rapids and experience the woods, and that brings a lot of economic impulse here, input here, because people are coming in and spending money here, and then also just enjoying the woods. But it's been going on for 36 years now, and kind of a big deal. And again, it's kind of a neat tradition, and something that to me is the coolest thing about it is that we get a lot of hands-on work with the birds. We get a lot of solid demographic information for this area, and it's been one of the longer running data sets that I can think of.
Yeah, that's very valuable.
Yeah.
Interesting that it would be here. I've talked to a number of people who have come to this area, either moved here to do work in this area or have come here to do part of the national hunt. Mm-hmm. And we have a reputation. This is not a bad place to grouse hunt.
No, it's not. And we, you know, not only are we kind of in the heart of the range, we have an active timber industry, but we have a lot of public access here.
Yeah.
And that makes a big difference. And then, you know, sometimes the national hunt gets a bad reputation. People think, well, they're coming here, they're shooting our birds. And but when you think about it, you know, on average, they kill two birds apiece over 90-mile radius of Grand Rapids. And then the other thing is that, you know, that happens all over the nation. If you go to Colorado and you elk hunt, you're hunting Colorado's elk, quote unquote. And so again, that's a thing that is tough for some people, because it's true. You have folks coming from out of town, but the one thing that, you know, is the economic benefit, and then also the fact that people appreciate it and kind of gives Grand Rapids something extra to be proud of, is our ability to hunt here and the resources we have here is pretty amazing.
I think this is my own opinion, of course, but I think that what happens with grouse hunters for the most part is that 90% of them are getting the low-hanging fruit. They're hunting trails, they're hunting roads. Those people who take a dog and just bushwhack,
yeah,
those people, you know, they're not, they're going to see the birds and yep. they're going to get some of them, but they're not going to be bothering those people who are road hunters.
Yeah. And you know, there's, when you break down hunters, there's all different stages. And so there's people that are out for getting a limit and others are out for the experience. And there's all these different types of hunters. And a lot of those people with dogs that are busting the brush, they aren't as successful, but maybe their motivation is spending time watching their dog work, not so much getting to pull the trigger and actually taking something home.
Yeah.
But again, just like anything in life, there's multiple motivations.
Well, before we go, we got to hear about this trip you are taking with your daughter to go hunting with your dad. Where are you going? What are you hunting for?
So we're going to the Trinity Mountains in California, which is the northwest corner between the Sacramento River Valley and the Pacific Ocean. And we'll be hunting blacktail. And looking forward to it. It's been a long time since I've actually got to carry a gun and hunt with my dad. And it's like revisiting childhood. So I'm looking forward to sharing it with my daughter. And like I mentioned earlier, I bought her some little hiking boots so she can do some downhill walks with me.
Wow. That's great.
I've heard hunting in that kind of country that you want to shoot the deer that are uphill from where your car is.
That's what my dad does. He's so crippled at this point that if it's not accessible, you know, uphill of the road or on, you know, not the road, but near the road, because he has a buggy side by side that he runs around in, he doesn't shoot them. He just doesn't have, he can't get in there anymore. He's too old and crippled. So,
well, you know, if you've ever dragged a big deer or any large animal up a hill in the mountains where the atmosphere is already thin to begin with, you discover that your conditioning coming from Minnesota is not enough.
Yes.
When did you start hunting?
I've been hunting basically my whole life. I mean, my earliest memories are being wrapped in wool blankets and stuck in the back of an old Willie's Jeep and, you know, going to the mountains. And so it's always been a part of my life. And I don't think there's any designation. I guess when I first started getting to pull the trigger and hunt was around 10. And then I would sit and wait for my dad to come home from work. Next to the old, we had a 56 Ford. He still has it. And that's what we hunted out of after the Jeep got put up. And I guess I've been pretty excited and serious about it my whole life. Same for my sister.
That's thrilling. Great.
Nice.
Well, we hope to have you back. And is there anything we might have missed or a website you want to direct people to?
Well, you know, I guess I would like to say something outside of grouse hunting. And it was something that came to mind recently is, we know we got archery season and then rifle season coming up and for deer. And I just want people to consider wearing a harness, a safety harness, because it seems like every year someone dies or becomes paralyzed or brutally injured by falling out of a tree stand. And I almost fell out of one a couple of years ago. And I think that's my service announcement this year, is just go and buy that safety harness, buy a comfortable one so you wear it and use it.
Okay.
Good advice.
Meadow Kaufeld joining us this morning. We're talking hunting. If you want to weigh in, tell us what's going on in your world, send us an email, comments@kaxe.org. Thanks for stopping by.
You guys are welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much.